Hello, folks. Welcome to Music in Mind. This is episode 4, and in this episode, I will be talking music bits and bobs with Peter Lerpinier, the Associate Director of Nursing for Mental Health, Learning Disability, and Older People. I'd like to just make a wee point about this blether that we had. Of course, living in the Borders, we don't always get the best signal, best reception for, well, what a number of things, I suppose, phones and TVs and broadband and things like that. So anyway, that's a bit evident in this chat. Unfortunately, at times, the line is a bit, scratchy. So just bear with it, though, because there's some good blether and there's some good music. So I hope you enjoy.
Yeah, I mean, I think the one of the things about the whole kind of COVID-19, I guess, having the NHS, pulling together, and I think something like this is just chimes with that that beat, as it were, that rhythm. People are, we're all having a crack at something, you know, we're all doing things a little bit differently, or a lot bit differently, if you like.
Yeah, I think you're right. Not just even, yes, definitely within the NHS and at our places of work, and whether that's from home or if we are getting onto the ward or into an office or whatever, certainly. But in our home lives as well, we're doing things quite
differently. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. You know, I'm in my own little bubble, as it were, with my wife and one of my daughters.
Yeah.
And although we're now allowed out, as it were.
Yeah.
We're still, one of my other daughters has been to visit our garden.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. No, but we're seeing other at work, I've seen very few people in the same way that everybody else has.
Yeah.
You know, it's a very surreal thing. And there was a point when, quite early on, when I was, all I could think was, actually, I recognise how incredibly lucky I am, because my life had not dramatically changed. Basically, I was going to work in the morning, I was coming home in the evening. There's a song in that. It's a Bruce Springsteen song. But I would, I would come home and, I didn't feel like things were dramatically differently, and all I could think was, I'm so glad I don't live in somewhere that doesn't have a garden or where I've got very young children and I'm trying to explain why they can't go out and play anymore.
So even
though, you know, there's a lot of people appreciating what the NHS was doing, and rightly so, for all of our colleagues, and but actually there's also still that touch of normality that we had. Some respect to other people
doing. I've been kind of, that's been a theme really, with a lot of people that I've spoken to, and I'm sure yourself as well, just that we're lucky to be where we are in the Borders, you know, and being, it doesn't take as long to feel like we're in the countryside, you know, like we're in a rural, you know, we're in a space where there's green stuff around us, as opposed to walls. And buildings.
And that sense of I'm in somewhere where, so I do my garden, for example, and I talk about putting my hands in the soil, and that kind of opportunity to just to breathe clean air and not be trapped in. I did, I've got one of my daughters who's very content, but is in she's in accommodation. Described as a block of flats would be misnomer, but it's a flat kind of complex in Newcastle.
Okay.
And the opportunity, she doesn't have the same opportunity in that respect. So they're not partners out of exercises. Good walk around the centre of Newcastle.
Right, yeah.
So she and I share a love of performing.
Okay.
Theatre.
Right. Okay.
You know, so I am I do lots and lots of non-professional theatre.
Right.
You know, so how, you know, some of that has taken a musical route. Some of it not. I mean, I'm probably most noted in the circles that I move in for my Basil Fawlty, doing Fawlty Towers.
Okay.
Probably the musical song, the song that has stuck with me, I guess, in terms of what I've sung. I played The Dentist in Little Shop of Horrors.
Oh, right.
And there is a song called Be a Dentist, which in the film is sung by Steve Martin, but it's a cracking sort of song about a sadist as a dentist. It's just really funny and musically pretty good. Except when I sung it. I really don't have a great voice. I don't have a great voice, and I don't have not a great dancer. So despite the fact that I've played in plenty of musicals and pantomime, choreographers have dashed themselves to pieces on my two left feet.
But it's clearly something that, I mean, theatre's, you know, you've kicked us off with this. So theatre's a big part of your life. Someone you get an awful lot of enjoyment from, and that, you know,
I absolutely love it, Rory. I love theatre. I love performing. I love telling a story. Uh-huh. I love, you know. Last year we did Macbeth in Dunn's.
Uh-huh.
And we'd never tried Shakespeare before. We just thought we'd give it a go because actually we just fancy the challenge.
Yeah.
And I have to say that it was a huge success,
right?
Just in terms of performance.
Mm-hmm.
I played in Tayside Opera in I think it was La Traviata.
Tayside. So I mean, where is it you're from originally, Peter?
Oh, I'm a mongrel. I am a complete mongrel. So I'm going to do a quick whistle-stop tour. I was born in Lincolnshire.
Mm-hmm.
We moved to Hull. I spent 8 years in Sunderland, and there were still bits of my North East accent come through from time to time.
Yeah.
We moved to Dundee. I spent 10 years in Dundee.
Okay.
And then moved to Edinburgh, moved to Oxford, back to Edinburgh, down to the Borders.
Yeah.
You know, so I've been all over. I've lived all over the country, and I have to say that I've been on the borders now for 20 years.
Yeah,
this is without doubt, this is home.
When I was younger, just a bad little kid, my mama noticed funny things I did, like shooting puppies with a BB gun. I'd poison guppies, and when I was done, I'd find a pussycat bashing its head. That's when my mama said,
what did she say?
She said, my boy, I think someday you'll find a way to make your natural tendencies pay. You'll be a dentist. You have a talent for causing things.
Hey, hey.
Some be a dentist. People will pay you to be inhumane. Your temperament's wrong for the priesthood, and teaching would suit you still less. Some be a dentist, you'll be a success.
Oh, that hurts! Wait, I'm not numb!
Shut up. Open wide. Here I come! I am your dentist, and I enjoy the career that I pick. I'm your dentist, and I get off on the pain I inflict. I thrill when I drill a bicuspid. It's swell, though they tell me I'm maladjusted. And though it may cause my patients distress, somewhere in heaven above me, I know that my mom is proud of me.
Oh, mama.
Cause I'm a dentist and a fixer. Say ah. Say ah. Say ah. Now spit.
Everything I want is certainly within striking distance of here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, some other, I've said I love the theatre. I want to go and see pretty much anything. I've got Edinburgh, or I've got Newcastle, or I've got the Borders.
Yeah. Right?
And there is a thriving theatre scene in the Borders.
Yeah, so you find it quite easy to access the kind of the arts that you want to see, you know, Edinburgh, Newcastle, Borders. You know, you've got a good choice.
Yeah, there's not been any point at which I think, oh, I wish I was down in London so I could see it, so I could go to the West End.
What do you think it's been like? Just curious. What do you think it's been like during lockdown, during this coronavirus crisis pandemic, in terms of theatre? Because I have a lot of friends, and I've been involved in making music and performing music, and I have lots of friends who are still doing that, whose lifelines were cut quite dramatically. And they took to providing a lot of online material through social media. So I know there's lots of online concerts and things like that, and I'm really kind of connected with that. I'm not so sure about the theatre side of things.
It's interesting. I think that there is lots of different mediums through which people are doing that, or rather, you know, avenues rather than medium. I mean, it's obviously all happening online, obviously. At the moment, every Thursday, the theatre group that I'm, Dunn's Players, who I do most of my theatre with, every Thursday we read something online. Mm-hmm. We have tended at the last during this to focus on Shakespeare, just because we were getting ready to do Twelfth Night.
Okay.
You couldn't call it a rehearsal. It's an entertaining read through a play.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, we're doing the Lady Killers in a couple of weeks, and you know, it's just nice to stay in that contact with people.
Mm-hmm.
I know other people who are singing online.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, there's some friends of mine who do a trapped gig, mm-hmm, every Saturday night,
mm-hmm,
and they just play the quests, basically.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so there's an artist on guitar, and one of his pals will join, and then latterly there's just been more and more of them all joining online, which actually, as we can, I've no doubt you can hear through this, things are slightly off beat, so to play along with people, when you know that they're perhaps a beat behind you, I think that must be murder.
I can actually confirm that is the case.
Yeah.
It's extremely difficult.
I talk about finding someone's rhythm, you know. So when I'm working with people who have difficulty communicating, I would often look to find the rhythm, as I would call it. So what was it that made them feel that I was in step with them? I'd imagine that's part of your job. That's a significant part of how you work.
Yes.
In terms of...
I would say you're finding a way a way to connect with someone, and you're finding what it is that you're doing when you're with that person that is helping to make a connection.
Yeah, and so if you're doing that through a medium like, you know, when you're online and perhaps the beat is a beat behind, I think that adds an extra layer of complexity.
Yeah, and, you know, then you have to think, is this actually helping? Is this a good thing or not? So,
yeah.
So let's take a couple of steps back. we were at, we got as far as the Little Shop of Horrors, Be a Dentist.
I suppose I would regard that as covering a certain genre. If I was to summarize one of my musical genres that I listen to or that I would relate to, that would be one of them. Because that you can listen to Be a Dentist, but you can consider I'm also thinking about the Rocky Horror. That's got the time warp, and you know all of those songs that you're going to drag out of musical theatre. That you can encapsulate those in
and the kind of the enjoyment that it brought you, the fun that you had, and the memories that are associated with that time.
Yeah, I mean, there is nothing like for me. Performing and relating to an audience in terms of the high that you get. It's extraordinary. And I did some stand-up for a while. I was terrible
really? That
stand-up.
Is interesting. Not that the Little Shop of Horrors and the theatre isn't. It's all into, but stand-up is, that's putting yourself out there, isn't it?
Absolutely, and I was awful. I wasn't actually, to cut myself some slack, I did have some decent material, I did have some decent gags, but I wasn't, I was never going to make the cuts. I was too worried about what people thought of me. And I think I probably did 30, 40, 50 gigs, I can't think, over quite a long period of time. And when it works, when you're on stage and you relate to the audience and they laugh at something, or they connect with you, it's just, you know, you feel like you've been carried shoulder high in the room. So I did, for about 10 years, I wrote and performed in the emergency services pantomime in Berwick, which used to raise about $5,000 a year for the hospice.
Okay.
And it was locally, I would say it was a big event, but it was a thing, as it were. I suppose one of the comparable highs in that was if you wrote a gag and the cast didn't get it or didn't, and you stick with your gut and you're saying, look, just deliver it. Just trust me, deliver it. And I remember one particular occasion, just a particular construction of a joke, sitting backstage and listening to the three members of cast on stage delivering the lines that I'd said they should deliver. And then, even at that point, not understanding what the joke was.
Yeah.
And only when the audience fell about laughing did it dawn on them the context. So that was a comparable high.
But
I mean, the biggest thing is with the audience, just is with you all the way.
Yeah. I find it very interesting. And actually, I listened to a podcast by an American guy called Mark Maron. I don't know if you've ever listened to it.
I don't think so.
All right. Well, I don't know if you ever. I don't know if you do podcasts, but Mark Maron is an American comedian, and he had a conversation recently with Jerry Seinfeld. And these two guys, Mark Maron and Jerry Seinfeld, are like stalwarts of the American comedy scene, but they'd never had a conversation before, and it was really interesting. They sort of talk about what it is in comedy, what it is in the stand-up, Jerry Seinfeld's, I think he's late 60s now, and he's going out on the road again, you know, he's going out doing a solo stand-up thing. And he's saying it's all about the laugh. It's just getting the laugh. When you get the laugh, that's it, you know. They have different approaches to comedy, but, it's really interesting conversation.
It's a sort of truism that the most miserable place to be is at a table of comedians at the Edinburgh Festival, because none of them want to crack a gag in case someone else uses it the next day.
Okay.
If you spoke to a lot of my friends and said, what would be, you know, what song reminds you of Peter, they'd say Born to Run by Bruce Springsteen.
Okay.
just because I'm a big Bruce fan. That's hardly it's hardly revolutionary. It's utterly mainstream. But probably I was listening to Greetings from Asbury Park, New Jersey in the early 70s. That wasn't mainstream then. You know?
Yeah, sure.
And I've, you know, followed his career for the last 40 years, and I saw him the last time he was touring the UK, and he still got it. He's still just such a powerful musician.
Now, that wasn't that long ago, was it? 3 or 4 years, maybe?
Yeah, it was about 3, 4 years. Maybe 4 years ago. Uh-huh. Hard to remember. It seems like yesterday. Everything seems like yesterday. He's still just swinging a guitar around his neck. He's still got muscles that I've never had, you know? Such a nice guy. He comes across as a really kind of humble guy.
He does, yes. To be honest, I don't know an awful lot about Bruce Springsteen. I've not listened to his music that much. I'm aware of a certain amount of his songs. He did an album, maybe it was 10 years ago or more, where it was very kind of bluegrass Americana, a lot of...
He's covered so much in his career. He tends to be associated... People who don't listen to that much more than... I'm going to date myself, you know, but people who listen to the singles, not the albums, tend to associate him with, you know, which, I mean, Born to Run, I think, is a belter, but most of his other singles aren't great. Mm-hmm. But if you go, you know, off that and onto, albums like, I'm going to go back a little bit, albums like The River, albums like Nebraska, Born in the USA, there are brilliant tracks on there they're soulful, they are angry, they are driven, they are blue collar gems, you know.
Wow.
probably the first genre of music, actually, that I, when I stepped away from my family, as it were, would be in the punk era.
Mm-hmm.
So about 77, mm-hmm. When I was listening to, I started listening to The Clash. I remember I swapped, so I had been a little bit into heavy metal,
mm-hmm.
and I swapped a Rainbow Rising album. Yeah. Like Richie Blackmore's Rainbow, Richie yeah. Blackmore, formerly of Deep Purple,
yeah.
for The Clash's first album. And I unquestionably got the better end of that deal. When I moved to Berwick, there was a man called John Dowswell who was, so I was working as a community psychiatric nurse.
Uh-huh.
And a man called John Dowswell was the team manager of the social work team.
Right.
And I was introduced to him on the phone. So I mean, he was going to be really, you know, he's going to play an important role in my working career down there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it was important I got to know him quite quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And I was speaking to John on the phone, no idea who he was. It was the first ever conversation we had.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, in his London accent, which I'm going to do really badly, but just I can't help.
Go for it.
He said, if Adolf Hitler flew in today, and I said, they'd send a limousine anyway, which is a line from White Man in a Hammersmith Pie.
Right, okay.
And John's reply was, you're probably the only person in Berwick who would know that song.
Right spot, the right wheel
remember in a stand-up earlier, I used to go on stage to Carmina Burana by Off, which is, I don't know if you know it, but it's incredibly, you will certainly know it if you listen to it. It's an incredibly dramatic piece of music. Uh-huh. And I didn't, obviously, couldn't spend a lot of time, but that was my intro music.
Right, okay.
The other piece of classical music which has a resonance for me, and I mean, if anybody's listening to this, I might actually lose half the audience at this point, but I'm a Sunderland fan. So the time when I was becoming aware of football, I was living in Sunderland, so I'm a fan of Sunderland.
Okay.
And Sunderland used to come on at the same time to The Dance of the Night by Prokofiev. Again, just a fantastically dramatic piece of music, which would then be followed by Cushing the Awful Football. It was a great piece of music to come on stage to.
Yeah. And it's that thing about, it serves several purposes, I suppose, doesn't it? You know, it sort of gets everybody in the kind of the right frame of mind, that where they're like, yeah, here we go, we've got this.
Yeah, it was.
You know, you've touched on something there, though, and how music is just a different way, and that music is used to influence, the people who are listening to it, or to encourage them anyway into a certain way of thinking.
I mean, you could do, if a good, a good concert, a good show, a good performance will take whatever medium you're using, but take the audience through an emotional journey, as it were.
Uh-huh.
So music, music will do that the way that I don't think anything else quite as effortlessly. And I talked about my jaw was talking with people with dementia, and playlist life has been a great movement, as it were, in the field of dementia, and getting people to use music to tap into people's emotional reservoir. And I, absolutely support that. Music has for forever been a way of invoking a particular emotional response from people.
Sure.
And, if you were to go across what I thought, I happen to be a white middle-aged man in a Western society. But if you went to India, if you go to Scandinavia, if you go to any different culture, the Aboriginal cultures, the Native Australian cultures, everybody has a form of music. Which they play to invoke particular responses, and
Yeah.
So it is absolutely, you know, a pan national, as it were. It, mm-hmm. Although there are cultural reference points.
Yeah.
One of my other great musical loves is Peter Gabriel.
Okay.
And Peter Gabriel was a big connection in, you know, a movement called World of Movement and Dance.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, World of Music and Dance. And WOMAD.
Yeah.
And he did a lot of work with musicians from all over the world.
Yeah, he set up Real World Records, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, the body of work that he helped to put out there to make available to a wide audience is incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he is, you know, that combination of being a genius in his own right and a genius at facilitating other people's artistic and creativity. I've seen him probably about half a dozen times. In fact, for a long time, if you'd asked me what the best gig I ever went to, I would have struggled between a Springsteen gig and a Peter Gabriel gig.
Right, okay.
Probably if you were to say what would be my signature Peter Gabriel track, I would probably choose In Your Eyes, which I just think is beautiful. Beautiful song.
And what's that off?
What
album is that? Is that from?
I think that's off his fourth album.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, to almost bring up Circle, one of the interesting scenes from a film, I think, with Pretty in Pink,
mm-hmm.
is this guy standing outside the girl he is wooing's window in the pouring rain, holding up what was a beatbox of the time, and the beatbox is playing In Your Eyes.
I get so lost sometimes. Days pass and this emptiness fills my heart. When I want to run away, I drive off in my car. But whichever way
and the grand facade so soon will burn without a noise, without my pride. I reach out from the inside. In your eyes, your eyes, your eyes, in your eyes, your eyes, the light, the heat.
Get great joy out of music from my daughters. So,
sure.
I've got three daughters. So, one of whom performs on stage in musicals, one of whom just plays, one of whom sings and plays guitar.
Yeah.
All to different degrees.
Mm-hmm.
My oldest daughter, Lizzie, has got into the habit of at Christmas, she gives me some music from the previous year.
Oh, okay.
In an effort to make sure I don't get stuck.
Right.
And one of the first time she did that was the vaccines for them.
Okay.
That's probably, it must be about 4 or 5 years ago. Mm. The thing that astonishes me with all my children, and I would say that probably is true for young people of today, far more than it was when I was growing up. They have such eclectic musical taste.
Yeah.
You know, and Maddie, so Maddie will play a playlist, and that playlist will be songs that I would listen to in spades, you know. So she loves The Clash as well.
Uh-huh.
She'll play Aztec Camera. I didn't realize anybody still listened to Aztec Camera,
yeah.
But
yeah.
You know, she'll play Aztec Camera, and then she'll put on something, you know, she'll put Christine and the Queens or something else on it, you know.
Yeah.
And I'll go, oh, this is really interesting. Who's this? So, you know, and that sheer joy of music is something that is a real pleasure.
It's great when I know exactly where you're coming from here. I've got teenage boys, and when, you know, just having someone else sort of deliver some new music to you is great, and with eclectic taste as well, so you don't know what direction you're going to get sort of pushed or pulled in.
Let it go. Oh, I don't know. Oh,
one of the things for me is that I have tinnitus.
Right.
So, quite often, if I'm listening to music, music has to be in the foreground for me. So I have to actively be listening to it. To otherwise, you know, I miss bits as a consequence of my tinnitus. You know,
okay.
if I'm just passively absorbing sound,
uh-huh.
I tend to listen to the spoken word. So I listen to plays or listen to news programs.
Right. Sure.
So. You know, because I go to sleep with some spoken radio on at night.
Okay.
Because otherwise it's difficult to get to sleep. But
Okay.
So laughter is huge for me. Laughter is a really, really important thing for me.
Mm-hmm.
And it has seen me through one of the most joyful occasions I can remember with my family recently. It was at my mother's funeral it was 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It was 4 years ago. We were going to the cemetery. My mum died in Dunbar, but she wanted to be buried with my dad up in Dundee. So nobody lived in Dundee anymore, so we all went up to Dundee. We stayed overnight, and then we all came out in the funeral. You know, we're out in the funeral cars the next day.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't associate funerals with laughter,
mm-hmm.
but we just laughed at the stories of my mum and dad together,
mm-hmm.
and our joy in that. And it was a genuinely joyful occasion that
uh-huh.
my mother would have been very proud of.
Uh-huh.
And so the point I'm making within that is that I think laughter is one of the best medicines.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the best things that people can do. And that is not at all to trivialize people's experiences or suffering or whatever.
Sure.
I've been in this for nearly 40 years, and mm-hmm. I've laughed more with issues than I've cried with. But I've cried with a few.
Yeah.
So if there is a motif for me, it is around laughter.
Okay.
And the reason I'm putting quite such a caveat on this is that probably the song that sticks with me as a motif is Always Look on the Bright Side of Life,
okay.
by Monty Python.
Mm-hmm.
It was called Blasphemous in its time. It was, but it's still regularly voted the funniest, the best comedy film ever made.
Mm-hmm.
But Always Look on the Bright Side of Life from Life and Brian is such a good spoken dive of, you know, we will get through this. We will beat this.
Yeah.
We all will have our good days back again.
Some things in life are bad. They can really make you mad. Other things just make you swear and curse. When you're chewing on life's gristle, that grumble, give a whistle, and this'll help things turn out for the best. And always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the light side of life. If life seems jolly rotten, there's something you've forgotten, and that's to laugh and smile and dance and sing. When you're feeling in the dumps, don't be silly chumps, just purse your lips and whistle, that's the thing. Hey.
Always look on the bright side of life.
Come on.
Always look on the bright side of life.
Life is quite absurd, and death's the final word. You must always face the curtain with a bow. Forget about your scene, give the audience a grin. Enjoy it, it's your last chance anyhow.
So always look on the bright side of death.
Just
before
shit when you look at it. Life's a laugh and death's a joke, it's true. You'll see it's all a show, keep them laughing as you go. Just remember that the last laugh is on you. And
always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the right side of life.
It's available in the foyer. Some of us might live as well, you know. All right, it's a lot. Let's get this place up there. He changes his mantle within 3 weeks. You think pays for this, brother? You're going to make the money back, you know. I told him. I said to him, Bernie, I said, they'll never make that money back.